Hi, everybody. My name's Norm. I'm an alcoholic. I wish I could just breathe. You know what? This is, it's really an honor to do this, and I know everybody says that when they get up here, but it just really overwhelms me. I knew I was going to cry. You know, because I was just, you know, I've had a week to think, and you know what? I've done really good, except for this morning I woke up and I could not breathe, and what I did was I just went to work, and you know, I have to talk to customers all day, you know, and I really don't like people, and I really had to be of service, and that is my job, is, you know, to talk to 100 people and really be of love and service and to go out of my way for them and to get out of myself, and I really didn't want to do that, and I'm going to tell you by doing that, I remember I was talking to this man for an hour, and I really forgot that I was speaking tonight, you know, and that's just what I learned here in Alcoholics Anonymous. And if you're new here, I really want to welcome you here because this is the best thing that's ever happened to me, you know. My life is so incredible. You know, I may not look happy, but I really am, you know. You know, I don't smile much, but I really am happy. And, you know, I got to Alcoholics Anonymous when I was 29 years old. And I drank for about 15 years. And alcohol was my friend, and drugs was my friend, because that's the only way I knew how to live, you know. I loved to drink, and I loved to take drugs. That's just what I did, you know. I knew no other way. And I didn't think when I was 29 years old, and I was living at the Piccadilly Apartments with me and my cockroaches and really wanted to commit suicide that day, and I've tried to commit suicide many times. You know, I, you know, cut myself and call a friend. But, you know, this time I really meant it. And for me it was the disease of loneliness, you know. I had no friends when I got here. No one wanted anything to do with me, and it wasn't like that when I was 13 years old, 14 years old when I started drinking, you know. I never crossed the invisible line. I drank, you know, I'm a blackout drinker. Thank God I don't remember, you know. When I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, I didn't know, you know, if maybe I met you somewhere in an alley, you know, or maybe perhaps drank with you. Thank God, you know, I don't remember a lot of things I did out there, but you know, and I'm 9 years sober, and when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, if you're new, I want to tell you I didn't plan on staying 9 years. You know, I just wanted to kind of rest because I was just really tired, you know. I said the only prayer I knew how to say that morning at 6 o'clock in the morning when I was all out of cocaine, I was all out of alcohol, and that was, God, please help me. You know, and God heard me that morning, you know, and when God heard me, I was able to stay sober, and I had not drank since I walked through the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I wanted to, believe me, you know, when I was new, because, you know, that's all I knew how to do, and it was real difficult for me when I was new to sit in meetings and to try and be quiet and graceful here. When I was new, I was one of the lucky ones. You know, they say don't get involved in your first year. Well, you know, no one was beating down my door when I was new, thank God. And, you know, only the sick ones, you know, came to me, but really nobody wanted what I had, and I was lucky. You know, I was tired when I got here, and I looked tired, and I looked new. You know, I'm a product of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I took a bath. My hair is one color almost, and I wear underwear, and it wasn't like that when I got here. You know, I was 29 years old. I came out of straight out of West Hollywood in the punk rock scene, and I had bleached blonde hair that just was spiked up in the air with this long white braid that used to drive everybody in this room crazy, and all my ears were pierced, and I wore these dog collars, and I remember I came to the Thursday night meeting in black fishnets with some lime green pumps just to match my lime green cocktail dress, and I didn't know why these people were coming up to me, you know, or you knew. I had no clue. And I really had an attitude, you know. I was really, really hostile and really angry when I got here, and there was a lot of people that saw through that, that I was full of so much fear that the anger came out, and I was very angry in here, you know, until I was, not a long time, but, you know, it kind of,
by staying here and not drinking and working the steps and not hitting somebody one day at a time, it is really, I don't know where the anger went. You know, it's, when I look back at when I got here in Alcoholics Anonymous to where I am today, it really baffles me that the promises have come true in my life, that I am able to go out there among the living and try and be a normal person, you know, somewhat. And, you know, I didn't know what a lady was. You see, when I came through the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous, I was one of those drunks that were very shameful when I got here. I had a lot of secrets when I got here, and you already knew my secrets because I sure didn't hide them. You know, I was very vocal when I was new and really told you what I thought. And I stomped around this meeting and, you know, said a lot of cuss words and, you know, wore these short little tops. And I remember that I was at Ohio State. It used to be my favorite meeting. I was maybe 5 months sober, and I was wondering why I wasn't getting a date. And I remember I told this old timer, you know, I said, you know what, I feel like I'm a virgin all over again. And she said, well, not by the way you look, honey. And I wanted to kill her, you know. And I remember I went screaming, because I like to scream across the meetings, and I went screaming out the door to my sponsor, and you know what, she had a talk with me that night. And she sat down with me, and she says, you know, Norma, why don't you just try and dye your hair one color? I said, you know, why? It has nothing to do with sobriety. She says, why don't you tone down your makeup? Why don't you try to wear a dress, you know? And I didn't see how that had anything to do with staying sober, but I did it because I didn't want what I had anymore, that I was so tired inside, and that I was willing for the first time to really listen to someone and to really have that hope that if I did that, that maybe my life would get better. You know, and I dyed my hair one color. You know, she told me to wear a dress to this meeting. Well, I wore my bondage skirt. I thought that was just as good. You know, with my black fishnets and my bondage boots. And, you know, she just kind of looked at me and she knew that there was hope. But, you know, I'm a drunk, and I love to drink. And for me, you know, I don't know if I was born an alcoholic. I just knew that I needed alcohol when I was 5 years old. You know, when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I felt like such a victim. And I acted that victim role for many years in these rooms. You know, it's the only thing that I had to hold on to. That was such an old idea that took a long time. It took many years in Alcoholics Anonymous for me to release that old idea of being such a victim. You know, I blamed God. I didn't know who my father was. You know, my mother put me in foster homes, and she died when I was 5 years old. And I remember sitting at the garbage can and didn't go to her funeral. And I swore that day that I was never going to love another human being as long as I lived. You know, never was going to love anybody because I felt so hurt. And I blamed God for everything at that time, you know. And when I found alcohol when I was 13 years old, and it saved my life. I was one of those uncontrollable teenagers, you know. I was watching the show today on crack cocaine of these kids that are 14 and 15 years old and the devastation that they do to their parents, and it just brought me back to what it used to be like for me. And that the miracle is that I don't have to live that way anymore. You know, I don't have to end up in San Diego with five or six people I have no idea who they are or where I am. That I don't have to throw up, that I don't have to black out, and that I don't have to be remorseful and feel all that guilt that I felt when I was drinking, you know, but I couldn't stop, you know, I just couldn't stop drinking, and I didn't want to because that's the only thing that I had to keep me going. My grandmother moved, you know, I always say I never took geographics. My grandmother had to move, and we moved to Reno, Nevada, and, you know, and I never liked being Mexican. I am Mexican, and I thought that there was something wrong with me. I knew that my life would be just fine if I had blonde hair and blue eyes and big boobs, you know. I just knew that my life would be good, you know, and I know today that that's not true, you know, because I've talked to a lot of blondes. So, and they're just as crazy as I am, you know, they're just as crazy as I am. And we moved to Reno, Nevada, you know, and I told you I didn't like who I was, and I was to live and meet the friends that I was to meet, and I got drunk for the very first time, and it was on a bottle of wine, and I loved it, and I blacked out, and I came to, and I lost, you know, I was no longer a young woman, as I'd like to say, and I had no clue of what was going on. You see, at an early age, I don't know where it came from, but I knew that I didn't like myself, you know, that I just loathed myself, and I knew that if things would be better over here, and I knew that if maybe if I was white, that everything would be okay, and I tried to. When I was a little girl, me and my friends put me in a bathtub full of Clorox and scrubbed my skin, trying to think that maybe I was dirty, you know, that this really wasn't my skin color, you know. And that's why I say thank God that I found alcohol, you know, thank God that I found it. And I got into a lot of trouble when I lived in Reno, Nevada. You know, I was a hippie. That was in the, I feel so old, but that was in the 60s. And, you know, I grew my hair long. I panhandled in the streets of Reno, Nevada, and I was just one of those teenagers that found drug and alcohol, and I never went home, never cared about what my grandmother thought. And the cops always picked me up, and I was always in juvenile hall, and they never went to school. And, you know, my grandmother was tired of it, so she thought maybe if we moved to the east side of San Jose that everything would be okay, you know. And then we went to the move to the east side of San Jose, and here I am, a Mexican looking white. Now I have to go where the lowriders are, and, you know, I fit in really good. And so I dyed my hair blue-black and shaved all my eyebrows off and ratted my hair as high as I could and bought a 1960 Lowood Impala and with a little steering wheel. And and I fit right in, you know, right in that crowd. And I met the people I was to meet at school. One more time, I didn't go to school. I hung out in the streets, you know, hung out in the streets, slept where I had to sleep, did the things I had to do to get loaded. And that's just really what I did, you know. That was just my whole inventory is, you know, there was nothing fun, nothing, you know, I did it just to try and keep my sanity, you know, and I was introduced to other things and other chemicals that I was to use there, and I used to get into a lot of trouble, so I was in and out of juvenile hall. They knew me by my first name. It was really nice. I'd go in, you know, once a week, have a place to stay, hang out with my friends, and, you know, they got tired of seeing me, and when I was 16 years old, the judge sentenced me to Synonym in San Jose. Well, Synonym is for heroin addicts. I'm not a heroin addict, you know. I may just drop a little too many reds and drink a lot of alcohol. And, you know, and I was introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous when I was 16 years old, and I needed Alcoholics Anonymous at that time. But I just wasn't ready at that time, you know. I met a lot of friends in there, so when I got out of the Synonym program, you know what I did. You know, I got right into that. And, you know, and when I turned 18 years old, things started to change, and that was that I'm a thief, and I love to steal. I'm not like a big armed robber or anything like that. I'm just one of those petty people that will steal from you when you turn your back. You know, I love to rob houses. That's what I did. I robbed your car. You know, I did whatever I could out there just to get what I needed to get, you know. And I never thought that I was self-centered or that I never did anybody any harm. You know, all I cared about is me and what I could get out of this because there was so much hate inside of me. And when I was 18 years old, on my 18th birthday, I went to jail for the first time for burglary, and I was in and out of jail. And my grandmother got tired of it, and she moved, you know. I went to the judge when I was about 20 years old, and he said, Norma, if I see you one more time, you're going to the penitentiary. I don't care if it's jaywalking. And I just didn't care, and a week later, I was back in there. And by the grace of God, I just believe that the woman that I burglarized said if I returned everything, that she wouldn't press charges. And I returned everything, and I was released from that jail, and I was happy to get out of there. And by this time, my grandmother moved, and she moved to Sacramento. You know, poor thing, she really tried to get away from me, and and I really had nowhere to go, and so I followed her in this little rambler from up north, to, you know, from San Jose to Sacramento, and my disease just progressed. You know, I found another friend who lived upstairs and proceeded to drink and proceeded to try and live in a profession where I couldn't live in because I kept forgetting to ask for the money, you know, and so that really did work. And, you know, all my life, all I've really tried to do is just try and be as tough as I could and as hard as I could because I didn't want anybody to get close to me. And the ways that I did that was by the bizarre ways that I dressed and by the bizarre ways that I looked. And I put as many tattoos on as I could possibly put on my body. You know, I'd get a little bored. When I was 15 years old, I met this guy. You know, he drove a motorcycle, and I was in love. And so I tattooed his name on my arm, and, you know, I dated him for a week. And, you know, I had Tony on my arm, but, you know, I covered him with a rose, so thank God. And, you know, I have crosses everywhere, and I have this one tattoo on my stomach, and it's just really embarrassing because when you're new, your sponsor's going to want you to go to the doctor. You know, that was, you know, I don't go. And my sponsor made me go to the doctor when I was about 9 months sober. It's really embarrassing when they ask you to take all your clothes off and to see all these tattoos, especially the one that looks really cute on my stomach. You know, I was bored one day when I was locked up, and I wanted, like, a cute little peace sign, and it ended up with four legs and two antennas, and and I have a cockroach on my stomach, and I remember the doctor said, you know, what happened, and you know, when you're new, I told him my inventory, he really didn't want to hear it, and poor thing, and here I am, I'm in Sacramento, and I was to find the type of people that I was to live until I walked in the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous. And one night I was in a blackout like many nights, and I came to, and I was there was a woman sleeping next to me, and I had no idea how she got there. And I thought, oh, well, what the heck. And so I had a lot of shame, like I told you, a lot of guilt, and I had a lot of secrets when I got here. And I firmly believe that for me, I am as sick as my secrets. And one secret that I wasn't going to tell anybody is that I was to live the gay lifestyle from the time I was 19 years old till I was 29 years old. because I was so afraid that no one here was going to accept me for what I was. You know, the women looked so good when I got here, and I, you know, when I shook their hand, I didn't know if I had a crush on them or if I, you know, wanted to be their friend. I was really clueless. And I remember that my sponsor told me, she says, you know, Norma, we don't care what you do, who you sleep with in Alcoholics Anonymous. All we care about is that you stay sober one day at a time, and that's not a big deal. And when she told me that, it took such the power away from me that I had no more shame and no more guilt over that, you know. And so, you know, I hung out with a lot of drag queens, and they used to do my hair, and I hung out with those, with that type of lifestyle, and my alcoholism progressed until I got a very physical and very violent woman. And I was with this woman for 5 years. I don't know why she ever left me, but I used to beat her. And I couldn't understand, you know, really when she left. But the awful thing is that when I would come to every morning, that I would look at her and she'd have two black eyes and there would be holes in the walls, and I thought, oh my God, I did it again, and I couldn't stop. I just couldn't stop anymore, and I could not predict how I was going to behave when I took a drink. It was no more friends and no more games out there. I had to move from Sacramento because I knew LA would be different, you know, and this was when the punk rock scene was in, so I really got good and heavy in that, and that's when I dyed my hair, you know, orange and white and purple and all different colors and went slam dancing out and on Sunset and was really ashamed of the things I had to do out there. You see, alcohol just took me places I really didn't want to go. But that's just where I went because that's the only way that I knew how to live out there. You know, when I got sober, I couldn't fathom not taking a Quaalude, not taking a drink, and staying sober. I was clueless, and I knew that I wasn't going to be able to do it because alcohol saved my life, you know. Towards the end of my drinking, I was all by myself, you know. I got a job in between there when I was 21 years old. I don't know how I got this job. I still have it today. That was when disco was in. So I went on this interview, and I had fuchsia hair, and I wore my gold lamé boots. And, you know, I didn't have a high school diploma, and it was for Pacific Bell. You see, the type of work I did before then was, I was the manager of a porn shop on Skid Row, and I really enjoyed that job. And I remember I went to this interview for Pacific Bell, and it was for a customer service rep, and I had to try and hide my tattoos, and she said, Norma, do you like people? And I said, yes, I love them. And and I got hired. I don't know how I got hired. And I remember they called me and said, you know what, you have the job. And I was just kind of in a dilemma because, you know, I'm still managing this porn shop, and I didn't know which one to go to. And I decided to go with Pacific Bell, you know, and I've been with that company I think almost 16 years, which is incredible. And the reason why I still have that job is because I'm a good hard worker. You know, when you're loaded as much as I'm loaded, I'm very nice to people on the telephone. You know, you call me to make arrangements on your bill, you can pay it next month. I may forget to write it on your account, but you can pay it next month. And I was just really bizarre at work, you know, and never tried to dress the corporate way that they dressed, and worked really hard and drank at that job. And when I was 21, 22 years old is where the hallucinations started to come in. I didn't know that they were DTs until my sponsor told me, but I saw things that weren't there. People used to talk to me, and when I drank, I could feel the fear leave me from the top of my head to the tips of my toes, and that's why I drank, because I couldn't stand the stark raving fear I had inside. And there I was, left all by myself, 6 o'clock in the morning, all out of everything. You know, towards the end of my drinking, my thing was, is I went to work when I went to work. You know, I almost lost that job, but, you know, my supervisors always did things for me that I am so grateful for. You know, I had hepatitis. I weighed about 155 pounds. I was jaundiced, and I was dying inside. And I lived at this apartment building, and I would go to the liquor store, and I'd hit the connection house, go back to the liquor store, and sit in the foyer of the Piccadilly Apartments waiting for anybody to come in that would sit there and talk to me, because I was so lonely towards the end of my drinking. I burnt out everybody when I was out there. I wasn't cute anymore. I wasn't fun anymore. You know, I'd been kicked out of Peanuts, which is just the slime ball of West Hollywood, and flown out of the DJ booth, and, you know, and... just out of the scummiest places, because, you know, that's where I really fit in, and that's really where I belong. And I remember that I went to my work at this time and I told my supervisor, I need help. I just need help. I can't stop drinking. And I don't know why they all got excited and jumped up and down and, you know, they were so happy. I just got to tell you the story, and that is that, you know, I told you I was a good worker and I got this award from Pacific Bell for being a good customer service rep. And I had to take this picture, and I have bleach blonde hair and it's standing up in the air. I have this white braid. I have all these earrings and this black makeup. I have this black turtleneck with this black spike collar, and I'm like this. And there's a woman here in a suit and a woman here in a suit. And on the top it says, we are the future. You know, and I gave that picture to a newcomer, you know, gave her some hope. And, you know, I still wish I had it. You know, I still have some pictures of what I look like, and when you look at my eyes, they're dead. When I was 30 days sober, I went to the liquor store I always went to, and that man looked at me and said, my God, where have you been? You look so good. And, you know, when I didn't know anything about AA, I forgot about it, and I had to go through a detox center. I didn't know you could walk through AA and stay, so I had no clue. And I talked to this man on the phone. He says, Norm, are you an alcoholic? And I said, no. And he said, well, only alcoholics are allowed here, and I started to cry. He said, I tell you what, let's just keep it our secret. Just tell me you're an alcoholic and I'll let you in here and I won't tell anybody. And and I said, okay. And I went to that meeting, and, you know, they say don't get involved. I was like 5 days sober. I met an old timer. He was 2 weeks sober. And, you know, we were out to just have a happy home until I found out, you know, he was kind of married. But, you know, that's why they say really don't get involved, because I almost drank, because one more time I felt like a victim. I'm just going to let you know that I did everything I could possibly do to stay sober. I didn't have a car. I didn't have a driver's license. I didn't have insurance. I was just holding on to my job. And I got sober in Hawthorne. And like every good newcomer, I would leave work carrying my big book underneath my arm, and I would take the bus from downtown L.A. to Hawthorne and Hawthorne back. I went to AA meetings, I went to CA meetings, I went to gay AA meetings, I went to NA meetings. I was really confused. And I just went to meetings. I didn't get a sponsor. I was looking for the perfect one. And I remember I used to go to this Thursday night meeting, and I was the only woman there, and it was a men's stag, and they let me stay, you know. They never kicked me out. And I met this woman, and she was to become my sponsor when I was 4 months sober, and I was introduced to this group. And I remember looking at this group and looking at all the beautiful women, just knowing that I was never going to get from where I was to where they were, and never knowing that I could feel the way I felt at that time, so bad and so dirty, that I would be able to feel as clean as they looked and to become a woman of dignity. I've never been a woman of dignity, and everybody here has taught me how to do that. And I have not done it gracefully. And in my first year, I just did what I was told here. And, you know, I got my high school diploma when I was 33 years old. I went and got my GED. And my sponsor says, what do you want to do with your life? Because I don't like talking to people all day. I hate my job. And by this time, I was newly sober, and I was disconnecting people's phones. I was hanging up on them. You know, I told this one woman to meet me outside. And I was not working a program. And I looked good in AA, and I remember calling my sponsor, and I said, you know, I don't feel good. And she couldn't understand why, and because I wasn't telling people what I was doing once I left these rooms. And I showed her at a woman's stag that I go to what I was doing, and that's where my sobriety really began to change. And I started going to work and giving my first name on the phone and loving them even though I hated them and not letting those people know that they got on my nerves, you know. And I wanted to be a marine biologist, so I went to school. I went to Santa Monica College, and I felt stupid. But I sat in the front row, and I cried every night because I felt so dumb. And I don't know who told me I was. And my sponsor says, you just do it. And I did it, and I got an A in that class, you know. And she says, why don't you see if you like scuba diving? You need to take scuba diving to see if you like the ocean. I don't like the ocean. I found that out. And you know, I was 3.5 years sober, and I went with a man in this group by the name of Greg, and I almost killed him because I was his buddy underneath the water. I left him. I didn't care. And I remember all underneath that dive, when I was doing those dives and I knew the sharks were going to eat me, I just remembered what my sponsor said, and that was, is that you can do anything you want as long as you walk through the fear. You're not a failure, Norm, as long as you try. It's just as long as you try. And I did. And I went through that, and I'm going to tell you, that's really where I had my spiritual experience. At 3.5 years sober, I'm standing on that boat all dressed up to go on a dive with all these people, and I only knew one on the boat. And for the first time in my life, I felt like I was okay. I didn't feel like I was dirty than those people. I didn't feel like those people were better than me. For the first time, I felt what I've always wanted to feel, and that's what alcohol did with me, is that I was okay. And I wanted that feeling once I got it, you know. And that's why I keep coming back. And I don't want to be a scuba diver. So, you know, I still continued to go to school, and I got straight A's, you know, at Santa Monica College. And when I was 8 years sober, it finally dawned on me that who in the heck said I was stupid? You know, for me, it just takes a little time. You know, sometimes I just think I'm not wrapped too tight most of the times. And but at 8 years of sobriety, I knew that I wasn't stupid, and I got involved with someone, you know, I just knew it was God's will. I always talk about it because I saw him at the Saturday night meeting from afar, and I just knew God wanted me to have him, and I knew that that God wanted us to get married and have babies, you know. I really knew that, and so we started to date. My life is just wonderful, you know. I was dating this guy, he was 20 years old, who cared, you know. I was 33, you know, age, I was just on the same mature level, so it was just fine, and I was going to school, and something happened. I don't know what happened, but I got pregnant, and I really didn't understand how. And I remember calling my sponsor, you know, I said, how did I get pregnant? And she said, Norma, you used to be gay all your life, remember? You know, and so, and I got pregnant, and I really thought that things were going to work out. And I remember I called my sponsor, and the one thing she said to me was, Norma, you can have this baby, that's fine, but you're going to have to remember that you're going through this all by yourself. You cannot ask that boy for one thing. You cannot give that boy 1 ounce of trouble. If he does not stay with you, that is his decision. Your decision is to do this on your own. And if you can make that decision, then my blessing is with you. And thank God that she told me that. Thank God she didn't say, oh, honey, it's going to be okay. You guys are going to live together. Because I would have blew my brains out, you know. He broke up with me at this meeting, and I really thought I was going to lose my mind. And the women here and the men here carried me through that whole 9 months of pregnancy because I was angry and I was mad. But I, in some way, walked through it with dignity where I left him alone, and I didn't go to Orange County. I did not slice his tires. I did not threaten his life. I left him alone. And what I had to look at was the pain that he was in. I didn't want to look at the pain he was in. I was in pain. And that's one thing my sponsor told me to do. And I had a baby, you know. I had a healthy baby boy. I was 34 years old. And I don't like children. I forgot to mention that. And I really have no motherly instinct. There's none in me. I didn't have a mother. I don't know what it's like. And I'm going to tell you, I had a very difficult time raising this kid. And that was another secret I had, another secret that I was very ashamed of. And that I wasn't going to share with anybody because I knew people were going to judge me here. And if they judged me, they judged me. I had to tell on myself. And that was that I didn't love my son. It was really hard for me to give everything I had to him. I did not like him. I did not want to be with him. And I certainly did not want to sing and play with him, you know. And I told the women here that what was happening with me because I wanted it to change because I was in so much pain and I was willing to do whatever it took to get to the other side of the blackness where I thought I was never going to get through. And I did a lot of work to come through that. You know, I was able to make amends here, and I made amends to that grandmother who died, and I drove up north and I sat at her gravesite and read her and my grandfather a letter, and such a freedom when I left there to know that there was no more guilt. And last year I was able to go back where my mother was buried that I have not seen since I was a little girl. And I was able to sit at that gravesite and read my mother a letter and to leave there knowing that my mother loved me no matter what. And to know that I was going to be okay. And once I did that and really started working the steps, things changed in my life. It's really incredible that I love my son. It gets on my nerves that I love my son. And it's still hard to sing with me. He tells me, Mom, don't sing. You don't know the words. And But you know what? We have the best life we can possibly have at home, you know, and it just took 5 minutes at a time and the women telling me just sing to them, just play with them, and taught me how to be a mother here, you know. And the amazing thing out of all that is that I left that young man alone, and the most incredible thing is that we are friends today, and he is an active participant in my son's life. You know, I never expected that at all. You know, I never expected one thing from him, and he's in our life, you know. Another thing that I was able to do is, you know, I hate my job. I really do. But I have to keep saying I love it. I wanted to be a construction worker. I don't know where I got that idea. And so I did. You know, I talked to my sponsor and I left Pacific Bell. And I did the actions, you know. I joined a union. I went to a labor school in Anza, California when it was in July and it was 120 out there. And I remember that I had to take a physical test, and the physical test was a grueling physical test. And Larry G and this group took the time out on a Sunday to go get bags of cement and help me and show me how to pick those cement bags up and to lift 2x4s so I could pass this test, you know. And I went to school out there, and it was a grueling school. I ate every single bug out there trying to do all the work, and I called my sponsor and I told her, I can't do this. She said, Mommy, you've only been there an hour. And she says, just give it some more time. And for 3 days, I was in a ditch. I lost all my fingernails. There was nothing feminine about me. And I was with this 90-pound whacker. We were fighting in that ditch. And I was sobbing hysterically. No one could see you because, you know, you're in this ditch. And I had this thing that weighed 90 pounds, and it bounced me from one side to the other. And I thought, boy, am I making a mistake. And you know what? Every class was a pass or fail class, and I passed every single class except one. And I couldn't, you know, do the one thing they wanted me to do was lift a 90-pound jackhammer and break a wall down. I'm not that butch, you know. And I graduated from that school, and I left that school and went to be a secretary. You know, it just was too much for me. And I remember I had to go back into the big book and walk through the fears. And the amazing thing is once I took that step again, I got a job. And I got a job at the Hyperion Treatment Plant building the new sewage tanks. And I was the only woman laborer there, and I know why. And I was there for 4 months, and I cried my very first day in the portable potty. I had to, you know, put my mask on and excuse myself, and sobbed hysterically, came back out, pulled myself together, and pretend like nothing was wrong. And I remember I called my sponsor, I said, I can't do this, and she says, you've only been there a day, and give it some time. And just by doing it, I was there for 4 months, and I loved it. I absolutely loved that job. It killed me. You know, I just figured, I'm 38 now. I was 36 at the time. When I was 50, I could not make a career out of this, and I was very happy to go back to Pacific Bell. And and I went there with a new attitude, a brand new attitude, and I showed up, wore suits, and did what I was supposed to do. And by doing that, you know, they sent me on a trip to San Francisco. And the trip is that we went to the corporate office to come up with a strategy to reduce customer complaints. Me, you know, the one that caused them all. And and I went there dressed in a suit and felt comfortable. And there was no fear in me at all. And I sat there with all these women I didn't know, and I had a good time. And I gave my input whether I thought it was stupid or not. You know, it was a 2-day trip, and I came back. And that those people in San Francisco called me again, and they wanted me to come back to do a corporate video for Pacific Bell. And the corporate video was to reduce customer complaints. You know, my friends that know me 15 years ago laugh every time they see this, but because they know, you know, what I was like. But you know, that was just one of the incredible gifts that I've had here. And, you know, if you're new, I just really want to welcome you to Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I'm just going to tell you, my sobriety has been growth and reprieve. And what I mean by that is things come up, you know, they always say more will be revealed to you, because thank God everything was not was revealed, because I would have blew my brains out. And what I have had to do in my sobriety is work very hard, because I want to stay sober, and I don't want to drink anymore, and I don't want to be a woman in the gutter anymore, and I don't want to live the way that I live, because I have such a good life here. Such a good life here. You know, and I never thought when I was new that I was going to feel this way, you know. You know, I used to call the women bimbos, and I used to cuss around here, and I just knew I was never going to get it. I was never going to get the inner peace, and that God was never going to allow me this gift. And the most incredible thing is that I stand with God tonight, because I know God's in my heart. And it took me, you know, right before I turned 9 to finally realize that. You know, I'm just a little slow, but before I turned 9 years sober, I saw it. I finally got it, and I got the light. I got the light that I knew that God was with me, and that God loved me, and that I was meant to be here, and that I deserved to be sober. I finally saw it. It left about a month ago. I know it's going to come back. But, you know, at least I touched it. And a lot of things have changed in my life, you know. Is that my life changed 5 months ago, and I felt like I was going to be judged here. And it was really hard for my life to change and to let go, but I'm the most comfortable as I've ever been. You could not tell that, but I really am. And that was is that I had to let go of what I thought was right and what you know, what what I thought was right and what was wrong and what you were going to think about me, because this is my home group and people here are going to love me no matter if I'm gay or straight. That's the truth here. And it was very difficult when I made that decision to date a woman to stay in this group because I felt like no one liked me anymore. You know, I remember I told my sponsor, I said, you know, no one likes me here. And she says, you know what, why don't you go talk to someone new? And I thought, what the heck does that have to do with the way I'm feeling? And, you know, and I did that, and I've become really active here. And you know what, and I'm not ashamed of it anymore. And most of the time, I'm comfortable with it. I'm comfortable with who I am. You know, I've learned here that you stay here no matter what and that you don't run. You stay here 5 minutes at a time like I used to do and your life gets better. And if you knew, I really promise you that. You know, you don't have to live the way that you lived. You can sit here and take a seat and for once in your life have some sort of peace that I never thought I was going to have. You know, I really want to thank Charlie for this because this is the biggest honor that I could possibly imagine. Even though I haven't been able to breathe today, it's over and I'm glad. Thank you.